Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Community Conversations playing on the morning show time slot here at KRFY. I'm one of the morning show hosts, Phil Huff, and my usual co-host, Julie Calamine, has not been able to join us, at least as yet. We are recording these interviews and doing them for later playback. So as always, we like to alert listeners that any time-sensitive information, take into consideration that this is a rebroadcast by the time you hear it. We're fortunate this morning to have with us a local author, Sharon Kreider, and we're going to be talking about her new book, recently published, titled Sylvie. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Well, thank you, Phil, for having me as your guest and for the opportunity to highlight my recently published book, Sylvie.
We have such an abundance of quality local authors, and it's always nice to have one more in the stable, and welcome back to the neighborhood. We're going to hear a little bit more about your background in a little bit, and welcome to the Club of Authors. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to find yourself back in the Sandpoint area.
Yeah, great question. Hard to wrap that up in about a sentence or two. I was born and raised in a small town in northeastern Canada, and I immigrated to the United States when I married my husband. We lived in the Sandpoint area from the mid-1980s to the mid-1990s, but had to move and resettle in Colorado, where I worked in the mental health field as a mental health therapist and later a suicide prevention trainer, providing counseling services for thousands of children, adolescents, and families. When I retired in 2019, we decided to return and live back in Sandpoint, and here we are.
Well, welcome home, or back home. And there's so much about the book. I've just recently read the book, and it was absolutely very compelling. It usually takes me a while to digest the novel, and I was able to sit down and do this over 2 days. And it was nice to be able to take in the story that way, first of all. Tell us about the process. How did you come to start writing this book?
Oh, that's such a good question. So this book really started as a conversation between my daughter and I, who had experienced and suffered through her own social struggles and social rejections. She's a really good writer, and she wrote some beautiful but disturbing stories that also paralleled my work as a mental health therapist. And I thought, boy, these stories really need to be told. I began to jot down these ideas, and that was really how Sylvie was born.
So we're talking about the book in a somewhat abstract way, because it's pretty hard to describe to the listeners something they haven't read, but let's take a stab at that. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Great question again. Sylvie is a woman's fiction novel exploring how those threads that bind a family together can unravel when a tragedy occurs, and how they find hope and inspiration to carry on.
I'd like to just unpack that concept of it being a women's fiction novel. And for those who haven't read it, there clearly are multiple points of view, most of which are coming from a female's perspective about experiences that heavily impact the female characters in the novel. But that's not to say that's all that's going on there. There are some strong male characters there and their processes too. And so as a guy reading a chick's novel, I still found it very interesting, and not just as an exploratory to find out what the heck's going on in your minds, but there are things I could relate to. So tell us a little bit more about how you perceive it as work coming from a women's perspective.
Oh, that's a really good question, Phil. And I appreciate your perspective as well, because I have had several men contact me and tell me how much the book meant to them too. And although the genre, of course, is women's fiction, I've been pleased to hear that there have been men who have enjoyed it as well. So I guess we'll talk a little bit about the inspiration. So my inspiration for writing the book was not only my daughter, of course, who I dedicated the book to, but for thousands of children I worked with, many who were young girls, I wanted to highlight some of the struggles they had through growing up and to recognize and honor their hardships. So interestingly, though, I've had a number of women and, as you said, men who have had a chance to read the book contact me. They've shared things like, hey, that was me in high school, or I felt just like Sylvie did, or you stated some of my own hidden struggles. So I've been surprised by how much the book has been more intergenerational, I guess, than I thought it might be.
I think it absolutely touches, well, we're getting a little echo there, see if that's any better. It absolutely touches on universal truths, which every good work of fiction does. In some ways, fiction can be even more real than real life. And I want to, again, come around to the idea of how you were inspired to write this particular story.
Well, that is another really great question. So I guess one of the things I could talk about is how the title has a special meaning. So the title really is Sylvie is an acronym for the six most memorable and challenging cases I worked on in my professional career. So each letter represents the first letter of their name. For example, S might stand for Sarah, Y might stand for Yvonne, L for Lenny, and so on. These are not the real names, of course, but it gives you an idea. So these particular cases, unfortunately, some of those cases involved death by suicide. That's still difficult to talk about, of course. I believe a child's death is always tough, but a death by suicide, I think, is even more so. And for those cases that I worked with who survived a suicide attempt, their stories are particularly meaningful for me. I really wanted to know and understand what led to such drastic thinking and planning. What were their thoughts and plans? Why? Did they think about those people that they loved? And what did their suffering, what was that fabric really like? And I also thought about why problematic emotions are so hard to share. I had a lot of questions and thoughts that are interwoven aspects of the story.
So it's a bit of almost a detective novel too, it sounds like, or an investigatory novel. There's some things that you're really searching for that you're hoping others search for in it. And what makes those six cases highlight that for you?
Oh, that's a really good question, Phil. So I think that, yes, it isn't about those six children in particular. Their cases inspired me, but the book is more than just about those six children. The story is really a blending and a culmination of hundreds of experiences. So during my work with families and their trauma, I came across many families who seemed successful and well-functioning, but were unaware or perhaps chose not to see some things happening within their family circle. Sometimes, some parents do not want to talk about delicate issues or believe that if they do talk about those things, those delicate issues, such as self-harm, for instance, they are perpetuating the problem or the situation. But in fact, that's a real myth. The exact opposite is true. So ignoring or not speaking about the behaviors or events in a child's life is not helpful. Listening, truly, truly listening does. So in the book, the high-functioning family with tremendous opportunity does not protect a child from exposure to our social world. For example, the current news media coverage regarding how social media may be affecting the mental health and the physical health of young girls today.
For me, one of the big takeaways from the book, and again, this is a universal truth, is that from all outward appearances, families or individuals can appear to be, quote, normal, whatever that exactly means. And yet inside their stories, their personal lives may be much more conflicted. And I think as we look around at all of us, that's true not only of suicide or folks who might have really severe mental health issues, but all of us go through life presenting an outward-looking face and masking things that are going on within us. And how important at this time of year it is to be able to reach out, and how important at this time is we've gone through a year and a half of limited contact with people because of the pandemic, to recognize that there may be things going on with individuals that we don't see. And so creating that environment, that safe space where they can come out of their shell, or we can explore ways to come into it. We Julie and I, have often hosted topics of interest to mental health in general. And I think at this time of year, it's a topic worth exploring a little bit. And I know that's not the main focus for your being on here, but coming from a career background with mental health, could you talk a little bit to the seasonal impacts of this? And I'll fill in with a little bit of local resources.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good, really good point. Yes, I can talk a little bit about two things I can address that. One of them is, like, to talk about the important message that I hope my book conveys to those people who read it. And then the second, some statistics that might be helpful. I hope my book highlights how important it is to talk and question and have dialogue with our loved ones, but especially for parents to ask their children that sometimes hard and sometimes awkward questions, and to listen without judgment, to have an open mind and an open heart. I know that this time of year can be stressful because there's just so much going on. I think also coming off of the last couple of years have been even the increased stressors of all of what's been going on within society and within home life. I think that according to the World Health Organization, suicide is the second leading cause of death for 15 to 29 year olds. And John Hopkins University just put out some recent data stating a 35% increase in adolescent mental health needs just this past year, citing social media and the pandemic as possible contributors. There are a couple other kind of interesting statistics that I thought were pretty significant for me, because when getting ready for this podcast, I thought I would just kind of look at what the statistics are, because I've retired from my career in mental health, but it still interests me, of course. So the National Vital Statistics Report said that between 2009 and 2018, the national suicide rate among 10 to 24 year olds increased by 57.4%. And each day in the US, there are approximately 5,400 suicide attempts by kids in grade 7 through 12. So I know that in July of 2022, there'll be that new lifeline, 988 will become available, which is, I think, a wonderful step in the right direction as we learn more and as we are more willing to dialogue about mental health in our society.
Here locally, we have a couple of organizations that have been helping to fill some of the void. Living in a rural community, resources are somewhat limited, and the schools support a system of counselors. But NAMI Far North, the local chapter of NAMI, has had a crisis hotline in the past, and I think they still have that active. They certainly are available as a resource, and this should sound familiar to our regular listeners, but we always have first-time listeners. In addition, the Sandpoint Resource Center, which can be easily found online, helps to connect folks who have needs with service providers here locally. I would always just urge, too, that we are a community, and it behooves each and every one of us to share in our connections and be alert to the signs and symptoms of distress and help folks out. And to do that by setting the stage with this non-judgmental space where people can talk about things that are real and important over the holidays, whether that's with family or friends or acquaintances.
Thank you, Phil. Well said.
And so I think this is maybe a good point for us to turn to a reading so listeners can hear some of the words you've written. Sharon, I think you're ready for something. This shouldn't be a complete surprise.
Well, thank you, Phil. I thought I could read from a chapter one. This is Mia's chapter, who is Sylvie's mom, and she reflects on some of her memories of Sylvie struggling with friendships in elementary school. Sylvie's insecurity was a slippery thing, like trying to hold a tiny fish, there one moment and gone the next. But looking back, Mia thought Sylvie might have started to feel a lack of confidence in herself starting in sixth grade when a group of popular girls interested in boys and rap music gossiped behind her back. They shunned her at recess. Not having anyone to associate with on the playground, she continued to draw in her little leather-bound notebook her dad gave her and wrote whimsical poems. Unfortunately, that only encouraged the popular girls to laugh at her even more. She found one other girl, Nancy, who did not fit into the popular crowd either. One evening, while Sylvie drew a bath, just a few months after beginning her friendship with Nancy, she asked, "Hey, Mom, could you help me wash my hair?" Sylvie had trouble washing her thick blonde hair. She couldn't get all the soap out. Mia noticed Sylvie's eyes were slightly puffy and pink. Everything okay? Sylvie didn't respond right away, waiting until her hair had been rinsed and tied up in a towel. No, she replied. Mia took a breath. What's up, honey? Sylvie's eyes filled with tears. I don't know how to tell you. Mia's heart started to beat a little faster than she would have liked. She tried to keep her composure. Tell me what? She searched for Mia's eyes, and when she found them, time seemed to hang between them, like a suspension bridge over a mountain canyon. Nancy tried to strangle me. The voice inside Mia went still, the blood pounding in her ears, strong like ocean waves. She didn't know what to say at first. Fear, like a cold hand, gripped the back of her neck. She swallowed a few times. I don't understand. She strangled you? Where? How? When? Mia tried not to let her sense of panic show. Sylvie crossed her arms, held her shoulders tight, and began to shake. I'm cold. Suddenly, she realized Sylvie was likely feeling as vulnerable as a newly sheared lamb. She wrapped a warm towel around her and hugged her tight to her chest. Tears pooled in the corner of Mia's eyes. She let them fall onto the towel on Sylvie's head. I love you. Tell me what happened. Mia couldn't imagine anyone wanting to hurt someone as innocent as Sylvie and those eyes. Who on earth would ever consider wanting to harm such a beautiful child? Sylvie told Mia that Nancy had hurt her a few times before. Hit her with a stick when she refused to play one of Nancy's games. Punched her in the arm at lunch. Threatened her with small acts of violence. 2 weeks prior, on a snowy day, lunch recess happened to be in the classroom. For unknown reasons, Nancy didn't like the game Sylvie chose to play. Sylvie said, "She blew up and ran over to me and grabbed my neck like this." she demonstrated by wrapping her soft hands around the sides of Mia's neck and squeezing. Sylvie couldn't continue with the story because she started to cry. Big sobs, her chest moving up and down. Mia held her for a long time, waiting until Sylvie's weeping became noiseless. "It's all right," she said, but she knew it wasn't. Mia vacillated between waves of shock and anger to hurt and bewilderment. She couldn't wrap her head around the implications. Even today, she wondered if she should have done more, seen the incident as a red flag. At the time, though, she tossed back those feelings, trying to maintain self-control. She didn't want to upset Sylvie any more than she already was. Mia consoled herself with a plan to take care of things, certain it would be a one-time thing. After all, her daughter just might be the next Picasso or Jane Austen.
That's so wonderful. And I've got a couple of questions to follow up with on that. And we are delighted because Julie has just stepped into our virtual studio. So welcome, Julie.
Hello, Phil.
And we're
Hello,
gonna,
Sharon.
Hello, Julie.
We're going to catch you up here real quick.
Yeah, sorry for the delay, but I'm so happy to be joining you as well. Yes,
thank you. One of the things, and I want to turn to some of the challenges of writing the book, but one of the things that I was struck with as reading the book is how as an author, you're able to inhabit the perspectives from so many different characters. And that's not an unheard of literary technique, but it's an unusual one. And very courageous to take on for your first novel. So applause to you in doing that. And again, inhabiting them each in such an authentic way. And so I hope that doesn't give away too much and yet encourages people to read and look at that. It occurs to me that while Sylvie may be the subject of the book by the title and the discussions we had earlier, if there were a main perspective, it's Mia's. That seems to be where the emotional center for the book is coming from. It's framed up at the beginning here with the reading that you've just made. And again, it's framed up at the end. And to me, it resonates as one of the most authentic voices. Was that your experience? Tell me a little bit about how you leaned into that.
So I think what you talked about, the challenges of writing this book, it's such a great question. I don't know, really know where to begin, but I think I'll start with a writing piece. So I try to write as authentically as I can to really dig deep and to explore what each character might be feeling or thinking, or how they view the world affects them in their very own personal way. The challenge of writing Sylvie was to have the real courage to write about difficult topics such as depression, grief, anxiety, loss, love, betrayal, despair, and to really dig deep. So when I was working with my editor, it was like there were some times where I was doing a couple of rewrites on some of the characters, and I literally took 2 days to write one page to just get that perspective as best as I am able to get that perspective or that feeling across. So that definitely was the challenge in the writing piece.
Yeah.
I know I'm doing a little bit of catching up here, Sharon, but how long were you writing this book?
It took me about 4 years to write this book. I started, as I was telling Phil, I started with jotting down a lot of ideas earlier, but then when I started to pull it together was about 4 years ago. But truthfully, I think this last year, when I decided to publish, I have literally breathed, ate, drank, and dreamt, Sylvie.
Yes. Character development is such an important part of that process. It's really interesting to hear you say that. We've interviewed other authors, and one of my favorite authors and close friends, fond of saying he creates the characters, and then he lets them determine where the story is going to go. And I suspect yours may be a more determined process, but the main point being that initial character development is so critical to carrying out the story. And you, it really feels like you inhabit your, each of your characters. They represent something from your core center or from your experience or that you want to project into.
Mm-hmm. And of course, as I said before, really this book is a story, is the culmination and a blending of hundreds of experiences, just not like, again, one person.
Let's talk a little bit about the challenges of publishing the book. You've talked to that. There's the writing process, and then you've got to get someone to put it out there for you.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Publishing. I guess I said writing is one thing. Publishing is quite another challenge. I really believe that a day hasn't gone by that I haven't faced more challenges than I ever could have dreamed about ever since I decided to push the button to publish Sylvie. I wasn't even on social media until April of this year. And that learning curve alone keeps me up at night. So I think I could spend like the whole rest of the podcast just talking about that. But I think the biggest challenge and challenges were and still are the business of publishing. So the marketing and the social media, the strategic publishing journey process, creating and building an author platform, knowing what works and what doesn't work, understanding how things have changed in publishing today. I had to ask, and I still have to ask, how I defined who I am as an author, and how does my book or eventually books fit in today's marketplace. I had to redefine my writing in terms of what my authorship could be, who my customers might be, the value of my work, what I need to do, and I'm still working on it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Your publisher is Grey Wolf Press, and I think they started out as a publisher of poetry. Did the poetry within your novel help draw their interest?
I would say that the it's a really good question. The poetry for me, I've always been a poet. But I wrote, that's how I started. I was writing poetry as a young girl. And I found words and such a wonderful way to express my thoughts and feelings. My teachers were always pushing me to publish a book of poems. I never did that, of course. At that time, I did other things. So about 15 years ago, I began attending writer conferences, participating in writing critique groups, networking. I sought advice from editors, book consultants, writing coaches to improve my writing and to begin to consider the possibility of publishing. But to answer that question directly, Julie, I would say that it's really about networking, really going to, and I don't know if you might mention a question about, advice for authors, but I would really say that the networking piece is crucial in knowing being out with in the world of writers and the world of publishing.
Let's talk about the poetry just a little bit. It is an important part of the book. I guess that's the best way to put it without giving too much away. But and it's fascinating. There is almost a book within a book just with the poetry that's in there. And it sounds like you've touched on one of the questions, which is where did the poetry come from? And you're the author then. It's not another source.
Correct.
That is in so many ways an interesting companion to the piece of writing a novel, writing the poetry or collating the collection of poetry you have to place in there. It was a really interesting part of the book journey, I think. And I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to, if you can, find one of your favorite poems in there.
Oh, yes.
And give us a reading.
Okay, on the spot, I have to my glasses on here, but I actually love all the poems. And the poems, I wrote the poems for this book. I wrote the poems as a young girl might write them, not as I am as a mature woman. I wrote those as a, you know, what would a 16-year-old, what would a 17-year-old, how would they write poetry? How do they see the world? So that was
that voice comes through.
And that was important for me. And I think there were a couple of poems that were really important for me. Of course, the last one, which I won't read, but I think I'll read the one from on page 323 from Tim's chapter, Shoes. Shoes. I've walked miles now, seen the sun, loved the stars, looked up and down, explored far, came home again. Taped up, broken, seams ripped, tongue frayed, skin turned brown, soul lost. In knee-deep mud, sticky with time, popcorn, soda, sweaty socks, glued in gum. Dropped from bridges, left behind, hung from telephone lines, drowned in icy rivers, left on foreign sand, been lost and found on merry-go-rounds, separated from partners. Survived by dogs and baby mice, tangled laces, dust and mold, empty places, used, abused, kissed, forgotten.
Phil, I can just imagine you're relating to this poem, and it makes me think of your many long wanderings.
Baby, yeah, it does. And like I said, I think the poetry is a powerful insight into the character you've created, the world you've created. It was a very, it's always difficult to say enjoyable around the topics that are dealt with here, but it was a very compelling book and on a number of levels deeply resonant, and the poetry helps to bring that home.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just going to jump in, and I hope you haven't addressed it yet. I know I'm coming late to the interview, but so Sharon, you know, the sort of the genre that you suggested the book might be in, or folks that would be attracted to this book might be healthcare professionals, parents, et cetera. But I mean, it strikes me as also perfectly suitable for young adults, YA fiction. And is that another area that you're hoping you're hoping to draw readers from?
That's a really good question, Julia. People have asked me that before. And when I was working with my editor, wondered if we would include that as a category. We did not include it as a category because of some of the delicate issues that are addressed in and fragile issues that are addressed in that book. So we kept it as in a subcategory as parents. So if I would appreciate that, it would be a parent that would suggest if for their child rather than it be me that does that. So I really believe that parents are the best ones to decide what might be best for their child to read. And so I'm keeping that pretty much open.
Yeah, I think it's a book that all parents should read, and some kids when they're older, probably.
Yes. Actually, one person, I'm sorry, Phil, but one person put up a review, and I believe that's exactly what she said. She said, this book is meant for parents and for the older teenager. I don't know who this person was, but I appreciated what she put up for the review.
It's a courageous book, and it was interesting, and I'm not sure if I've seen this before. You have snippets from your next book as an addendum to this one. And that was really unusual. I thought that was very interesting. And as I was reading through that without giving any of it away, that was a very courageous piece. And I applaud you for bringing to light, sharing the experiences you did in the afterword called Wanderings, which is really a foreword or prelude to prologue, which bleeds into, we would ask you what your next book's going to be about, but there it is at the end of Sylvie. Tell us a little more.
I wasn't going to put those three chapters in because my memoir is written already and is actually with the editor right now and will be published in 2022. But my editor really wanted to put those three chapters in to highlight, she's a firm believer in this book, And so I went, okay, so let's get a cover for it. And we put it together. So Wandering, and the book is titled Wandering, is a memoir focused on my younger years when I hopped on a plane from Canada, that small town in the remote part of Canada, to England. And I began a 3-year solo journey overland to Asia.
That's all we're going to get for now, Phil.
I think that's enough for now. And I would encourage listeners who want to read Sylvie to know that at the end there's more. And that after reading that more at the end, I'm looking forward to the more that's in the book to come in 2022, maybe?
Yeah, that's what we're looking at, summer of 2022. Should be out early summer. I'm also working on a third book, and that is another woman's fiction novel. That book is inspired by my mother's childhood growing up in the Depression in a very remote part of Canada. And I'm excited about researching and learning about the Indigenous people, the history, and dreaming about what the land and the wildlife might have looked like in the early 1900s up there.
Well, another thing to look forward to. Tell us a little bit about how does one go about finding the book here locally if they're so inclined to.
So Sylvie is available on Amazon. The bit.ly link, bit.ly/Sylvie book. You can go, that directly takes you to the site, is on Amazon, both as an ebook and as a paperback or at any bookstore near you. You can also go to my website, sharonkreider.com, for more information. And I write a weekly blog called Finding Solace in All Things Great and Small.
And I believe there's an upcoming appearance here locally at the library.
Yes, at noon on January 4th, 2022. Hard to believe 2022 is almost here. I will be the featured author on Local Author Connections. It's a live Facebook event sponsored by the East Bonner County Public Library.
Well, really something to look forward to see you in person and meet you and hear more about all things Sharon Kreider, Sylvie, the next book, Wanderings, and then, of course, an upcoming book about your mother. And I'm going to be looking for that one because my mother was also a child of depression. And she wasn't in Canada, but she was in Omaha, Nebraska, and it was quite an interesting life even there.
Yes.
Really be interesting to see the narrative arc through all three of those and how the storylines work together, because it's clear that there are some connections with each of them. So I want to thank you, Sylvie. As we close out, are there any final thoughts for our listeners you'd like to share?
I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to talk to our community. It's been wonderful sharing my book with you and with the world. And so thank you so much.
Thank you, Sharon. Julie, why don't you take us out?
I think I better, Phil, since I came in late. Well, listeners, I'd like to thank you for joining us for the KRFY Tuesday Morning Community Conversations. Today, we've been joined by Sharon Kreider, and she's been talking about her current novel, Sylvie, and upcoming novels. It's been a wonderful interview. I hope everyone enjoys it as much as I have.